as to the origin of diseases, that must be obvious to everyone, for as there are four component elements of the body, that is to say earth, fire, water, and air, the unnatural overabundance or defect of these, and their removal from their own to a different position, those of fire, we mean, and the other classes, for there are more than one, these are the causes why they do not each receive what suits their peculiar nature, and they necessarily produce disturbances and diseases. For as these are severally generated and transferred in a way contrary to nature, such things as were formerly heated become cold, what were once dry, moist, the light, heavy, all things, in short, undergo all possible mutations. For we assert that it is only when the same thing approaches to, and departs from the same in the same manner, and according to analogy, that it will allow what is the same with itself to abide in health and safety, and should any of them be in discordance, whether approaching or departing, it will cause all varieties of alienations, as well as unnumbered diseases and corruptions. But having now found the second set of conditions suitable to nature, the second mode of considering diseases also is now open to anyone desirous of so doing. For as the marrow, bone, flesh, and sinew are composed of those, as likewise the blood in another way, though from a similar origin, so also most other diseases owe their severity to the causes we have mentioned, though the greatest of them are to be traced to the following cause: when the generation of these various takes place inversely, then they become subject to corruption, for the flesh and sinew are naturally formed from blood, the sinews indeed from fibers, through the connection between these. But the flesh from its union with that which when in a separate state becomes solid, while the glutinous and fatty substance again which is formed from sinews and flesh, at once unites the flesh to the bone, and itself eats the growth of the bone itself, with which the marrow is surrounded. And again, that which filters through the solid part of the bones, being the purest kind of the triangles, as well as most smooth and unctuous, moistens the marrow by falling drop by drop from the bones. When these several things are the case, health mostly ensues, but when the contrary happens, disease. For when the flesh becomes liquefied, and sends back what it loses into the veins, then the blood mingled with spirit flows abundantly, and of all kinds, through the veins, with different degrees of colors and bitterness, and yet further, from its acid and salt qualities, it generates all kinds of bile, lymph, and phlegm, for, as they are all generated and corrupted in an opposite way, they first of all destroy the blood itself, and the fluids, that can no longer afford nutriment to the body, are borne along the veins without any natural order of circulation, at variance, indeed, with each other, because they derive no mutual advantages from the properties of each, but hostile to the constitution of the body, and its maintenance and health, in short, destroying it, and bringing it to putrefaction. Such, therefore, of the flesh as becomes liquefied by its great age, being indisposed to putrefy, grows black from long burning, and from having been entirely macerated it becomes bitter, and falls into discontent with the other parts of the body not yet infected with corruption. And then, indeed, instead of bitterness, the black part assumes an acidity, if the bitter becomes more attenuated, but when the bitterness is tinged with blood, it becomes still redder, and when mixed with black, it assumes the nature of bile, and yet further, to the bitterness is added a yellow color through the melting of new flesh and the fire surrounding the flame. And this common name for all these some of the physicians assigned them, or at any rate some who were able to consider many things dissimilar, and to detect in a single class a great number of particulars all deserving a special name. But all else that may be called kinds of bile, receive, according to color, a name peculiar to each. As for lymph, the way of the blood, it is gentle and mild, while the sediment of black, acid bile, is fierce and wild, and when mingled by heat with anything of a saline quality, it is called acid phlegm. Again, the moisture running from new and tender flesh mingled with the air, which is afterwards inflated and enclosed by moisture, produces bubbles, which separately are invisible, owing to their small size, but when collected in a large bulk become visible, and acquire a white color from the generation of froth. And all this liquefaction of delicate flesh, when woven together with spirit, we term white phlegm, the sediment of recent phlegm, tears, and sweat, together with all such secretions that the body sends forth for its purification. All these indeed become the instruments of disease, when the blood is not supplied naturally from liquid and solid food, but gains bulk from contraries in violation of the laws of nature. When any part of the flesh therefore becomes separated by disease, letting its first principles remain, half the trouble is removed, for it admits of an easy recovery. But when that which binds the flesh to the bones becomes diseased, and the blood flowing from the fibers and sinews no longer serves as food to the bones, and a bond to the flesh, but, instead of being fat, smooth and glutinous, becomes rough and salt from being parched by bad diet, then, in consequence of suffering all this, and being separated from the bones, it is itself crumbled down under the flesh and sinews, while the flesh falling at the same time from its roots, leaves the sinews bare and saturated with salt, and thus, entering once more the circulation of the blood, it increases the number of the aforesaid maladies. And if these bodily ailments be severe, still more afflicting and troublesome are those that precede them, when the bone, owing to the density of the flesh, does not allow sufficient respiration, but becoming heated through rottenness, falls into decay, and will receive no nutriment, but on the contrary gradually crumble away, bone falling on flesh, and flesh again on blood, diseases being by these means produced that are of a severer character than the former. By far the worst of all maladies, however, is when the marrow becomes diseased through some defect or excess, because it is then productive of the most vehement and fatal diseases, the whole nature of the body being necessarily reversed and destroyed. Again, as to the third species of diseases, we ought to consider them as divided into three classes, one produced by spirit, a second by phlegm, and a third by bile. For when the lungs, the great guardian of the breath, through being obstructed by deflections, will not allow a free passage to the breath, which thus has no egress one way, and in another enters in larger supplies than it ought, those parts which are not cooled by it become putrid, while those that receive too much of it, passing violently through the veins, distort them, and become liquefied, being shut out with the diaphragm in the middle of the body, and thus 10,000 severe ailments hence arise, together with an abundance of sweat. And frequently, when the flesh becomes separated within the body, breath is produced, which not finding escape externally, causes the same torments as the breath entering from without. The greatest pains that it produces, however, are when it surrounds and swells out the sinews and neighboring veins, stretching and distorting the tendons and sinews continued from the back. Now these diseases, from their disposition to extension, are termed tensions and contortions from behind, the cure of which it is difficult to find, because fevers supervene, and generally bring them to a close. But the white phlegm, when it becomes troublesome through the formation of air bubbles, being shut out by having breathing vents outside the body, is of a milder kind, and variegates the body with white spots, generating other diseases also of a similar character. But when mingled with black bile, and dispersed about the most divine circulations of the head, it acts as a disturbing agent, though with less violence during sleep. But if it come to those who are awake, it cannot be expelled without difficulty, and, as this is a disease of a sacred nature, or organ, the head, it is most justly called sacred. An acid and salt phlegm again is the source of all those diseases which are produced by a deflection of humors, and, because the places into which this phlegm flows are of infinite variety, it produces all kinds of diseases. But whatever parts of the body are said to be inflamed, all become so from being burnt and inflamed by bile. Now this bile, whenever it makes an expiration, boils, and sends up all kinds of tumors, and when inwardly restrained, generates many inflammatory diseases, but the greatest of all, when mingled with pure blood it disturbs the order of the fibers, which are scattered in the blood for this purpose, namely, of giving it certain measures of tenuity and density, and that it may neither through heat, as being moist, flow from the thin body, nor from its density become unadapted to motion, and so experience difficulty in flowing back in the veins. The just temperament, then, of these things is under the natural guardianship of the fibers, because if any one collects them together in the blood, when dead, and in a state of coldness, all the remaining blood becomes diffused, and when let out quickly, it coagulates in consequence of the cold surrounding it. The fibers possessing this influence over the blood, the bile, which is of the nature of ancient blood, and again changed into it from flesh by liquefaction, first gradually falls in a warm, moist state, and becomes coagulated through the power of the fibers, though when coagulated and violently extinguished, it causes a tempest and tremor within. When it flows with still greater force, it overcomes the fibers by its own proper heat, and by its ebullition drives them into disorder, and if it retains its prevalence, to the end, it penetrates into the marrow, and burning the bonds of the soul, as if they were the cables of a ship, dissolves their union, and sets it wholly free. But, on the other hand, when it flows less abundantly, and the body on becoming liquefied opposes its passage, it then, on finding itself overcome, either escapes through the whole body, or being driven through the veins into the upper or lower belly, escapes from the body, like a fugitive from a seditious city, and introduces deflections, dysenteries, or gripings of the intestines, and all diseases of a similar kind. When the body, therefore, is unusually diseased by an excess of fire, it then labors under continued burnings and fever, but when through excess of air, under quotidian and fevers, under dirt and through water, because water is less active than fire and air, and under quartan, through excess of earth, for earth, being of all of them the least active, becomes purified in quadruple periods of time, and hence introduces quartan fevers, which are with difficulty dispelled. In the above manner are the diseases of the body produced, but the diseases of the soul, resulting from the habit of the body, are as follows. We must admit that the disease of the soul is folly, or privation of intellect, and that there are two kinds of folly, the one madness, the other ignorance. Whatever passion, therefore, a person experiences that induces either of them, must be called a disease. Excessive pleasures and pains, however, are what we should deem the greatest diseases of the soul, for when a man is over-elevated with joy, or unduly depressed with grief, and so hastens immoderately, either to retain the one or fly from the other, he can neither perceive nor hear anything properly, but is agitated with fury, and very little capable of exercising the reasoning power. But he who possesses a great quantity of fluid seed about the marrow, and is by nature like a tree overladen with fruit, such a one having many throes, and also many pleasures in his desires, and their attendant offspring, being maddened to during most of his life by the greatest pleasures and pains, having a soul also rendered morbid and unwise by the body, is wrongly deemed to be not diseased, but voluntarily bad. In truth, however, sexual intemperance generally becomes a disease of the soul, through a particular state of fluidity and moisture caused by the tenuity of the bones. And indeed it may almost be asserted that all intemperance in any kind of pleasure, and all disgraceful conduct, is not properly blamed, as the consequence of voluntary guilt. For no one is voluntary lad, but he, who is depraved becomes so through a certain bad habit of body, and an ill-governed education, and to every one these are inimical, as they result in a certain evil. And again, in the matter of pain, the soul suffers much depravity through the body. For where acid and salt phlegm, and likewise bitter and bilious humors, wandering through the body, get no external vent, but revolve inwardly, and mingle their exhalations with the circulation of the soul, they in this case produce within it an infinite variety of diseases, greater or less in degree, more or less in numbers. They are introduced, indeed, to three seats of the soul, and according to the diversity of the place, each begets every variety of difficulty and sorrow, rashness, and timidity, and still further of oblivion and indocility. Besides this also, the vicious manners of cities, and discourses both private and public, often contribute to increase this malady, nor are any branches of learning taught in early life which tend to serve as remedies for such mighty ills, and thus all the vicious are vicious through two most involuntary causes, which we should always ascribe rather to the planters than the things planted, and to the trainers rather than those trained, but still it should be our anxious endeavor, as far as we can, by education, studies, and learning, to fly from vice, and acquire its contrary virtue. These particulars, however, require another mode of argument. Again, as respects the contrary of these, it is quite fit and proper to explain concerning the cultivation both of the body and the intellect, by what means each is to be healthfully preserved. For it is more just to take account of good things, rather than of the evil. Now everything good is beautiful, and the beautiful is not without measure, an animal therefore destined to be such, must possess symmetry. Of symmetries, however, we perceive and understand those which are small, but, as for the greatest and most important, of these we are quite ignorant. For indeed, no symmetry or want of measure is of more importance with respect to health and disease, virtue, and vice, than that of the soul towards the body, and yet into these we make no inquiry, nor do we reflect that when a weaker and inferior form is the vehicle of a strong and every way mighty soul, and when on the contrary these two pass into a state of compact union, then the animal is not wholly beautiful. For it is without symmetry in the most important points of symmetry, while an animal of opposite character is the fairest of all sights that can be beheld. Just therefore, as a body has immoderately long legs, or indeed any other superfluity of parts that hinders its internal symmetry, it at once becomes base, and the participation of labor suffers many afflictions, and many convulsions, and through suffering an aggregation of accidents, becomes the cause to itself of innumerable ills. The same too must be understood concerning that compound essence which we term an animal, as, for instance, when the soul in this compound is stronger than the body, and greatly prevails over it, then agitating the whole of it inwardly, fills it with diseases, and, by ardent application to learned pursuits and investigations, causes it to waste away. Lastly, when the soul employs itself in didactic pursuits and logomachies, publicly as well as in private, through a certain ambitious strife, it then inflames the body and dissolves its constitution, and by introducing distillations of humors, deceives the great part of those who are called physicians, inducing them to consider these effects as proceeding from contrary causes. Also, when a body that is large and superior to the soul in power is joined with a small and weak intellect, there being naturally two classes of desires in man, one of element on account of the body, the other of wisdom, for the sake of our most divine part, in this case, the motions of the more powerful prevailing, and enlarging what is their own, but making the reflective part of the soul deaf, indocile, and oblivious, thus induce ignorance the greatest of all diseases. There is one safety then for both, neither to move the soul without the body, nor the body without the soul, in order that by mutually resisting each other they may be equally balanced and in perfect health. The mathematician then, or anyone else who ardently devotes himself to any intellectual pursuit, should at the same time engage the body in gymnastic exercises, and the man, again, who is careful in rightly forming his body, should at the same time therewith unite the motions of the soul in the exercises of music, and or philosophy, if at least ho intends to be one that may justly be called beautiful, and at the same time right good. In this very same manner we ought to attend even to the parts of the body, that they may imitate the form of the whole, for when the body is inwardly burnt and cooled by the things that enter it, and again, is moistened by things external, and suffers all the consequences of these affections, then if anyone gives up his body, when quiescent to these kinds of motions, he is overcome, and perishes. But if any one will imitate what VVE called the tutor and nurse of the universe, and never allow the body to be at rest, but perpetually moored, and assist its natural motions both within and without, by ever implanting in it certain agitations, and also by moderate agitation bring into order according to their mutual relations the wandering passions and parts of the body, he will not, as we said in our former discourse about the universe, place foe against foe, and suffer war and disease to be produced in the body. But, on the other hand, combining friend with friend, will contrive to induce a state of sound health. Of all motions, again, that is the best which takes place in itself from itself, for this is particularly allied to intellect and the motion of the universe, that produced by another being inferior, whereas that is the worst of all motions, which, when the body is recumbent and at ease, moves it by means of others, and only partially. Hence, therefore, of all modes of cleansing and giving consistence to the body, the best is that effected by gymnastics, the second is that caused by easy conveyance, either in a ship or other suitable vehicle, but the third kind of motion, however useful perhaps to one in extreme need, must on no account be otherwise used by anyone endued with intellect, and this is that medical kind of motion produced by pharmaceutical purgation, for diseases, unless they are extremely dangerous, must not be irritated by medicines. Indeed, every form of disease in some respect resembles the nature of animals, for the condition of the latter has allotted to its stated periods of life, both as respects individuals and entire races, and each animal separately of itself has its fated life apart from the affection arising from necessity, because the triangles, which from the very first have power over each, are so composed as to suffice only for a certain time, beyond which period no animal can extend its life. The same condition of things also takes place in the case of diseases, for if anyone destroys them by medicine, but for the fated time, he will only produce great diseases out of small, and many out of few. On this account we must discipline all such maladies by proper diet, according as each has leisure, and not irritate by medicines and obstinate complaint. And thus much may suffice to have been said concerning the common animal, and its corporeal part, how each governing himself and governed by himself, may pursue a life regulated by reason. That part, however, which is to have the government of the animal, should, as far as possible, be better provided, and earlier also, with the power of being the fairest and best in the art of ruling. To treat accurately indeed of these matters, we require a separate work of itself, but even pursuing it by way of mere by work, every rapid, in accordance with what has preceded, we shall not be inconsistent, nor fail in the end of our inquiries. We have often then before asserted that there are three kinds of soul within us, and three parts of the body, each having its peculiar motions. And so in the same way we must now briefly affirm, that when any one of them is in a torpid state, and rests from its own proper motions, it must necessarily become extremely weak, and only by constant exercise attains the highest degree of strength. We should be careful therefore that each may preserve its own motions in symmetry with all the rest. But with respect to the highest and most leading part of our soul, we should conceive, as follows, that the deity assigned this to each, as a daemon, that, namely, which we say, and say correctly too, presides at the summit of the body, and raises us from earth to our cognate place in heaven, for we are plants, not of earth, but heaven, and from the same source, whence the soul first arose, a divine nature, raising aloft our head and root, directs our whole corporeal frame. In him, therefore, who has eagerly striven to satisfy the cravings of desire and ambition, all the conceptions engendered in his soul must necessarily be mortal, and he will necessarily, as much as possible, become entirely mortal, omitting no effort to improve such a nature. For one, however, who is sedulously employed in the acquisition of knowledge and true wisdom, and is chiefly practiced in this one pursuit, it is altogether necessary, if he would touch on the truth, that he should be endued with wisdom about immortal and divine concerns, and as far as human nature is capable of immortality, he should leave no part neglected, and thus, as he ever cultivates that which is divine, and has a daemon most excellently adorned residing within him, he will be exceedingly happy. But the culture of all the parts is one only, that of assigning to each their proper nutriment and motion. But the motions allied to the divine part of our nature are the reflective energies and circulations of the universe. These, then, each of us should pursue, restoring the revolutions in our head that have been corrupted through being employed on generation, by a diligent investigation of the harmonies and circulations of the universe, with the view of assimilating the reflective power to the object of reflection according to its ancient nature, for, by this assimilation, we shall obtain the end of the best life proposed by the gods to men, both present and future. And now the discussion which we announced at the beginning concerning the universe, as far at least as concerns the generation of man, is very nearly completed, for as to the rest of the animals, how they were generated, we will only briefly describe them, except where necessity bids us enlarge, for a person may think that he is this more in measure as concerns such an inquiry. On this subject, then, let us speak, as follows, of the men that were born, such as are timid, and have passed through life unjustly, are, we suppose, changed into women in their second generation. At that time, then, and for that reason, the gods devised the love of copulation, constructing an animated substance, and placing one in us men, another in the women, forming each in the following manner, that passage for the drink, by which these liquids run through the lungs, under the reins into the bladder, and which sends them forth, as it receives them, by the pressure of the breath, this made to pass into the condensed marrow, from the head, along the neck, and through the backbone. And this we called seed in a former part of this discourse, and this, in consequence of being animated, and endued with respiration, produces in the part where it respires a lively desire of emission, thus perfecting in us the love of procreation. On this account, the nature of men, as respects their private parts, becoming insubordinate and imperious, like an animal not obedient to reason, tries through raging desire to gain absolute sway. The same is the case with the wombs, and other connected parts of women, so called, as forming an animal desirous of procreating children. This, when it remains without fruit long beyond its proper time, becomes discontented and indignant, and wandering every way through the body, it obstructs the passage of the breath, and throws women into extreme difficulties, causing all varieties of diseases, till at length the desire and love of both parties, p.e. the man and woman, till to cause the emission of seed, like fruit from a tree, by which emission they sow in the womb, as in a field, animals invisible from their minute size, and yet unformed, which, as they become larger, they nourish within, and lastly, by bringing them to light, perfect the generation of animals. Such is the process of generation in women, and every female. Next succeeded the tribe of birds having feathers instead of hair, which were fashioned from men without vice indeed, but light-minded and curious about things on high, yet conceiving in their folly that the strongest proofs of these things are received through the sight. Again, the race of wild animals with feet was generated from men, who made no use of philosophy, nor ever inquired into anything that concerned the nature of the universe, and this because they no longer employed the circulations in the head, but followed the guidance of those parts of the soul that reside about the breast. Owing to these pursuits, therefore, they fixed their four legs and head earthwards, as suited their nature, having also long and variously shaped heads, where the circulations of each were compressed by inactivity, and hence their race became quadruped and multiped, the deity giving a greater number of feet to those more than usually unwise, that they might be the more drawn toward the earth. But as regards the most unwise of these, which extend all their body along the ground, as if they had no longer any need for feet, the gods formed them without feet to creep on the earth. The fourth class is that living in the water, which was produced from such men as were to the last degree unthinking and ignorant, and whom those transformers of our nature did not think deserving of a pure medium of respiration, because they possessed a soul rendered impure by extreme transgression, but drove them from the attenuated and pure atmosphere into the turbid and deep-breathing medium of water, and thence arose the tribe of fishes and oysters, and all other aquatic animals, which have received the most remote habitations, as a punishment of their extreme ignorance. After this manner then, both formerly and now, animals migrate into each other, experiencing their changes through either the loss or acquisition of intellect and folly. We are now at length to say that our discourse about the universe has reached its conclusion, for not only containing, but full of mortal and immortal animals, it has thus been formed a visible animal embracing things visible, a sensible god of the intelligible, the greatest, best, and most perfect, this one only begotten universe.
The end of the Timaeus.